This is the Humboldt Chronicles.
I am the queen of everything. Gotta be high before I can sway. Lighter TLNB. If you a viper.
I'm Chuck Rogers with producer Larry Trask. The Humboldt Chronicles is made possible by Humboldt Patient Resource Center, Eco Groovy Deals, Sonoma LabWorks, and the Humboldt County Collective. Thank you very much. We could not do it without you. That's just the truth. This hour, we want to confront a stark truth. That is, our economy in this region will never be exactly the same as it was from, say, the 1970s or so until 2018. It's a long road from an economy that's supplemented by a cash-based black market to whatever it is that we're transitioning to next. And no, we don't know for sure what's next. We do know that we're headed toward new territory. Bringing a once illegal commodity into the legal market requires us to pave the road as we go. The thing is, we don't really know if we're building a road toward water or desert. But as we all know, cannabis affects local businesses, even those not directly involved in the cannabis industry. The ripple effect. So, for this episode, we're talking with some folks not in the cannabis industry, along with someone who's in the front seat on this journey, who might have a good view of where we're headed. He is Greg Foster, Executive Director of the Redwood Region Economic Development Commission. Also with us here in the studio to take a look at what the gauges are telling us at this point in this journey. We have two retailers with us. They are Meredith Mayer from Six Rivers Brewery in McKinleyville, and Jace Walker from Eco Groovy Deals in Arcata. Greg, Meredith, and Jace, good to see you. You all. Thank you for taking the time to be here. Greg, to you first, you're in contact with the business community all the time. What's your top line assessment as to where we are right now?
Well, the data show that sales tax dropped from 2017 to 2018 about 6%, 6.5% countywide. And that varied from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. So we actually saw one small community have a slight increase, but then we saw it.
Which one was that?
That was Trinidad. So, but, you know, when you have a very small number of retailers like that may not be as affected. You know, one good year with one good retailer could affect all that. You don't have a very big sample size. But the county itself was down like 19%. And that's varied by the type of businesses as well. So, you know, some are up and some are down, depending on the type of business you are. And so auto sales were down, garden stores were down, that kind of thing, which you'd expect from if cash from the cannabis economy is drying up.
Which sectors are up?
Well, you know, up or flat were, you know, food and drugs. I think fuel and service stations was another number that were up. But, you know, across the board, things were down. Autos and transportation down. This is actually just for the city of Eureka, 10%. General consumer goods down 2.5%. And, you know, the far north state was basically flat from 17 to 18. And so, you know, less than 1%. So we lagged that here locally.
Mm-hmm. Meredith and Jace, for both of you in the retail area here, the premise is that retail is hurting somewhat right now. True or false?
True.
True. Go ahead, Meredith.
Yeah, absolutely
Meredith.
True. We certainly saw about a 20% decrease last year, and we've had steady double-digit growth since we opened in 2004.
Until last year.
Correct, right. Yeah, and continuing into this year.
Do you see a difference in the restaurant and out-of-area sales? You guys do some...
We distribute through Sacramento and the Bay Area, kind of up that 5 corridor now. And
so what's the difference in the restaurant and out-of-area beer distribution?
Yeah, I mean, there's money to be had. It doesn't just seem to be in Humboldt, is what I'm seeing. I'm
really
selling beer, and I'm steady in those areas. But we're
so in Sacramento and the Bay Area, you're still doing okay.
Yeah, but we're seeing our distributed beer here down a little bit, and then certainly in the bar.
One more question about in the bar, in the restaurant. Do you notice that you have the same number of customers or fewer? And of the customers, are they spending more by way of credit
rather than cash now?
Our credit card sales are up significantly, like almost 20% from previous years.
And how does that affect your bottom line?
Well, we're going to pay more on that mm-hmm. money. Certainly, that's right. less money that's coming in. And then you're waiting a little longer on that money. So for a business like ours where we're doing day-to-day cash flow, we're taking cash on a daily basis, it certainly makes it a little more difficult to plan ahead.
Does the out-of-area beer sales help mitigate that?
Sure, it helps balance it a little bit, yeah. But, we're one of the smaller breweries in Humboldt, so our distribution outside of Humboldt isn't on a really massive scale.
As long as it's enough.
Right, yeah, so yeah. There is some growth there for sure. But the beer market's getting pretty saturated too, so that's becoming harder out of the county as well.
Jace, what do you see?
Well, I think
you're growing, actually, right now.
We're growing, and I think we're a recession-proof type business because we are thrift-oriented, and we mm-hmm. listen to what our customers want. We go after it in the market and try to get it to them. And so we're on a growth spurt anyway, and we moved to a new location, which we're doing really well and people are really excited about. We're not seeing as much cash in the business and not as much on the big-ticket items. We sell a lot of Carhartt, and so uh-huh. The Trimmergrants would come down, and yeah. and folks from out of the county would come down and from the mountain and spend lots of cash for our high end products.
And people bring things into you, right?
No,
also,
we
you
pretty
go
much
get
source
it.
Outside of the area to be able to get the we're the largest buyers of Carhartt on the West Coast.
Okay,
and we have. I don't want to go into all that.
Well, but the people coming into a store like yours, though, are they people moving in? Are people moving out? What do you hear with your clientele?
I would say the reason I said yes that there's issues is because I hear a lot from other business owners on the plaza uh-huh. and in other as I move around the county.
Telling you what?
What they're experiencing.
And what is their experience?
Their experience is that their higher ticket items are not selling
right.
as well, mm-hmm. that they have to really look at whether or not they're, what products they're offering and try to figure out new items to sell to people.
Right. So it's not so much that the people are not spending, it's that they're kind of holding off on the big ticket, like Greg said, auto sales, for example.
Right.
Okay.
And friends of mine who had a motorcycle dealership, in two locations are now out of business because they were selling four-wheelers, three or four a week. And eventually, before they closed, there's one a month.
Another kind of thing that people may not buy right now.
And a high-ticket item that cash buyers who are
right.
out in the hills are driving around having fun on.
Yeah.
Now they're going to make them last.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that gets me back to you, Greg. What in your business, in your organization, what kind of businesses are you trying to recruit now?
Well, so what we're seeing is we lend money, and so we're actually quite busy, and we've been busy for the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. Where we're seeing success is businesses that don't rely just on local markets. And those that have, a product that that sort of is resilient to big swings, which means not expensive, not high ticket, mm-hmm. Maybe a lower, less expensive meal item, that sort of thing, and we have a couple service businesses that provide services that are doing very well. And, there's two things happening here, of course. One of it is the big effect and the change of legalization, and that's the other – that's, obviously had a major impact. But there's a whole change in retail going on nationally anyway. And if you look at retail sales in a lot of places, they're flat. And the brick and mortar mm-hmm. is having a hard time, especially if, it's – what I would call sort of a commodity experience where people are looking not only for retail shopping experience, but they want a sort of entertainment experience mm-hmm. connected to it. Because if you just want to order stuff, you're just going to go to Amazon, right?
Right. Yeah.
And that's happening all the time, especially among younger folks. I mean, I think about, I rarely order from Amazon just because I'm not used to doing that. Mm-hmm. But I think about my kids who are 20 and 24.
They know nothing else.
Yeah, they do it all the time. Why would I want to go to the store? I'm just clicking on my phone, ordering.
And I'm done.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned loans to businesses. Are those loans to existing businesses who are refinancing, or do you have new businesses?
Yeah, we do startups, and so we've had some new businesses as well as those that expand. And so, you know, we're looking at one now that where one of our businesses is looking at opening a second location because she's doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
It's a service business. Looking at a manufacturer right now that's looking for a big expansion. Mm-hmm. And so we'll be participating in that. So, you know, it comes and goes. And I do know that some of our customers have experienced some slowdowns, and so we're being cognizant of that as well. But
this was expected, though. I mean, am I right about that? I mean, we started the show in 2017 before January of 2018, before
right.
Prop 64
right.
went into effect. And we had people even saying then, you know, there's going to be a shakeout happen here.
Well,
so this wasn't completely unexpected.
Not at all. And in fact, you know, and unfortunately, I went to look for some state data before I came down here, and some of it isn't complete. But, you know, we had a big run-up, you know, and even if Prop 64 hadn't passed, uh-huh. you know, that kind of growth is not sustainable over time, you know, at some point. So, you know, if we're selling 3 to 4 four-wheelers, that's not a disposable item. That's a durable item, right? And so you're going to expect if we're selling that much volume, and that's one retailer, and we have a number of those kind of retailers out there. You know, at some point, unless people are just disposing of them, your durable item sales are going to top out unless you have this phenomenal economic growth going on. And so I think that's true to somewhat as well. You know, you buy building supplies, you build something, and then you've got that thing. And so at some point, that has to slow down.
Meredith, back to you. We've been talking here, and I think I've got the answer to my question, but I want to ask anyway here if I'm right or wrong. And maybe you have seen this at Six Rivers. It strikes me that money in this new economy that we're into and still trying to work out here, even if the same amount of money were flowing around here now as it was in the black market, it strikes me now that the money's going to different places like lawyers and laboratories and packaging firms
right.
and transportation.
Licensing
taxes.
Fees.
Taxes permitting.
Yeah.
Exactly. Does that affect how much disposable income people who might want to have a Friday dinner at Six Rivers and a beer?
Sure.
It
and
does.
Frankly, you know, speaking frankly,
yeah.
you know, we knew who was coming in and what they were doing. And, you know,
yeah.
We lived in Humble and we were owning a bar in Humble. And so, but, you know, we see those people now and they're, you know, now they're working, you know,
mm-hmm.
18 hours a day and
yeah.
in these office buildings instead of doing their work at my bar.
Right.
And so it's just a different, yeah. I mean, I think being in the market selling to bars and restaurants in general, I'm, you know, I think everyone's holding on and we feel like it's going to shake out because people who succeed are going to have money and their employees are going to
yeah.
have money and there's going to be that.
You just don't know who they are yet.
You don't know who they are yet and they're not, everyone's holding on to their dollars. Certainly in a business like the restaurant industry, if, you know, we had short months or,
uh-huh.
you know, cash gaps,
yeah.
we could, I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but, you know, money was at the bar, money was available, lickety split, and it's not that way anymore. So it's changing, I think, in general, the way that we're doing business, taking out cash loans
uh-huh.
or, you know, it's different. And so we're having
noticeable.
To change rapidly. Yeah,
yeah.
absolutely.
Yeah.
Does that square with what you hear, Greg?
Absolutely. And, you know, the point about, you know, people getting nervous, you know, so much about economics we talk about, and I'm not an economist, like Larry is not an economist, but so much is about consumer confidence, right? There's a big part of psychology in this. And so, you know,
nervousness.
Right. And so there's been a lot of media out there about, you know, the money's drying up, prices are dropping, et cetera, et cetera. And the other thing is yeah, you're now thinking, okay, I've transitioned and now I know I have quarterly tax payments and
mm-hmm.
I have all this. So instead of, you know, Saturday night, I'm going to go out and have a good time. It's like, yeah, maybe I ought to save some of this. And and people are getting paid now over the table. They're having taxes taken out and all that. And so that is a diversion of that capital that in the past, you know, it was a pretty compressed supply chain, right? You grew, you found a guy, you know, you sold, right? And
right.
the money was right there.
Yeah.
And now you're passing through any number of series of steps, including, you know, getting product tested continually, and then having to file all your taxes and you know your legal fees and all that. So I mean, I think there's real actual capital drying up coming out of the market. But I think also there's this change in attitude, which is we better start saving some of this and being a little more responsible with our spending
and see what happens.
Jace,
you are moving and expanding though.
True.
And tell me how that happens in this economy. What do you attribute that to?
Better brands, secondhand for less.
Well, that's the whole point, right? I mean, this would be a good economy to be in the business you're in right now. I mean, based on what you're hearing, right?
I would say so. I think if you're in the business that we're in, you also realize that I've seen many people come and go over the last 5 years, even trying it out.
Yeah,
it's a hard business because you're talking about a lot of goods for a low profit.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do volume, you know, and then we do all this community service on the back end. So we have 6 or 7 people that are being employed and costs that are about supporting community service projects. Even though we're a for-profit business, we're profit sharing. So we have to create, you know, we're a very different business. I think that's why we won Business of the Year. I have to throw that.
Congratulations.
Out there.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, moving on to the plaza is insane. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had no idea the difference in foot traffic and tourists and just right. I've missed out for years, but so, what can I say?
So even in this economy, that's a good move, because you were in a for our listeners who don't know, tell them where you were.
Well, we started out in a funky little building on the side of the road that no one knew about, that we painted lime green, and then we moved over to Westwood Murphy's Market, which is kind of outskirts shopping with lots of parking, and now we're on the plaza.
And you notice a big difference.
Huge. Right off the bat. Off the bat.
Nice.
I interrupted you, Meredith.
Super happy. But my neighbors, you know, they're happy to have us. I think they also are struggling. There's people that, you know, used to be able to sell very nice goods that are eco-groovy as well. I mean, made out of hemp and different things.
Right.
You know, folks that would have a lot of cash would spend $300 on a jacket or whatever,
which I have never done.
They can't sell now, and they have to really look at like who is my buyer and what is my buyer looking for, and what do I need to have on the shelves so that I can stay in business.
So you're hearing people do a lot of reevaluating,
absolutely.
Ah,
and okay. There's also stores that honestly, you know, Pop had the cash, and Mom had a hobby that she wanted to create into a business. And so some of those businesses are not getting the funding that they used to have.
Right.
They're slowly starting to disappear. So I'm not saying laundering, but I guess I just kind of did. But, and there's businesses that really had a target market that didn't change fast enough that were totally legit. And the reason they're out of business is because they just don't have the buying public that they had, you know, a year ago. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely a lot of retail change. That's true. Retail is very competitive. People think it's all, I would open a store.
No.
And get ready to work 8 to faint, you know, every day.
8 to faint. Yeah. You know, I mean, I've lived here all my life, basically. And you know, you mentioned, well, you know, the economy from the 70s till 2018 was essentially unchanged. And that actually, not quite. You know, it's actually been a lot of changes.
But there was supplementation during that time.
Granted. Yeah. And there still is. I mean, I think it's being replaced. So now if you look at the number of permits and the number of people being hired in, say, for the city of Eureka, you know, they're talking about all their manufacturing distribution businesses. I mean, there are literally hundreds of people working in those jobs now that didn't exist a couple years ago. And so that is going to, you know, slowly work its way into the economy, and I think, you know, the nature of work and what these people are paying and how they get paid will change. You don't get all your money in 1 month. You're going to get it every 2 weeks, you're going to have taxes taken out and some other things. But we have more people officially employed now than we did a number of years ago.
Officially,
that's the data we keep, right?
Exactly. I know.
And
that's part of the problem with evaluating this whole transition, is because there's not a lot of good data from before 2018.
Exactly.
Because How do you know?
And the thing, the proxy that we use often was, well, let's look at retail sales, right? I mean, and you looked historically and you would say, for what our reportable income is right. on the county and what our retail sales are, we're
this
spending
is off the charts.
Yeah, right. This doesn't quite make sense.
I mean, we're doing like, something right.
Exactly. Right, and right. so we could fill in, with that.
Meredith, I interrupted you a few minutes ago.
Well, and she touched on it too, but just about it's that the whole thing about change and that you have to, you're having to react a little quicker in our, for us, we have a lot of staff on the floor at a time. So it's like changing the way the schedules are coming and what time people are coming in. But it's easy when you're in a business, especially for the brewery, like 15 years, sometimes those things are just going, you're just scheduling it how you know it should be. And so being able to be aware and react and make sure you're cutting shifts and cutting costs and changing the way and those slight tweaks, but it kind of was a wake up call, I think, for us. And so I think it's a matter of, are you paying attention and are you making changes fast enough?
Well, and in managing that day to day and week to week and month to month, is your job harder now than it was before or easier in some ways?
Well, yeah.
Some of both, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, getting there to realizing you needed reports maybe you hadn't really looked at before. I mean, I knew Tully and I could basically tell you what we were going to sell in a night by $200,
right?
And now we just never know. And so, yeah, I mean, it's forcing us to run our business a little bit better. It's forcing us to be better business owners and better business people. And I think that that's kind of the silver lining, is you're going to see people digging in and having to work harder. I see that even in events around town. If you notice, bars and restaurants are doing a ton of cool events. There's a resurgence of new bands and theme nights and trivia. And, everyone's looking for a way to pull people out of their house. So it's making people have to be a little more creative and work a little harder.
We have to take a break in a second, but let me ask you real quickly just to follow up on that. What do you see in the events that you're involved in? Do you still see the same number of people there? And are they buying as much merchandise at the merchandise tables?
I'd just say it would depend on the event. Okay. Some are definitely proving to be more successful than others.
Yeah.
Styles.
Okay. Well, we are just getting started. Our guests are going to stay with us, and coming up next, how much pressure is on us to get this right, this new economy? To get it right. A lot of pressure. That's how much. We're going to discuss that. You're listening to the Humboldt Chronicles. And as we go to break, a Cultivator Minute from Luke Corey of Sonoma LabWorks.
It's now time for the Cultivator Minute, sponsored by Sonoma LabWorks. In this month's Cultivator Minute, Luke Corey, senior scientist at Sonoma LabWorks, talks about some of the lesser-known chemical components in cannabis.
In the early 20th century, scientists discovered terpenes in cannabis. In the 1940s, cannabinoids were identified. The inevitable descheduling of cannabis under U.S. drug policy will allow fundamental research into the spectrum of natural cannabis-based products to flourish. So let's talk about the other, less commonly mentioned naturally occurring compounds, flavonoids and alkaloids. Though identified by the National Institute of Drug Abuse in the 80s, these compounds have not received as much attention as their counterparts, cannabinoids and terpenoids. Flavonoids are simply a group of plant chemicals that contain oxygen and can be found in most fruits and vegetables. You may be more aware of flavonoids' visual effect on cannabis, as they are responsible for the purple and green hues seen on leaves and flowers. Alkaloids are a group of organic molecules that contain nitrogen and appear to have evolved in a protective response to feeding by animals. Research outside the U.S. has shown that these naturally occurring compounds have therapeutic properties, similar to their counterparts associated with the entourage effect. As the sophistication of cannabis extracts evolves in response to market trends, there is an expected increase in demand for the identification and quantification of non-cannabinoids. If this topic is of interest to you, I encourage you to visit our blog at SonomaLabWorks.com to learn more.
That was Luke Corey, senior scientist at Sonoma LabWorks.
Welcome back to the Humboldt Chronicles. In the first part of our discussion, we talked about where we are locally on this economic journey into something that's still fuzzy, yet definitely out there in front of us on the horizon. We're talking with Greg Foster, Executive Director of the Redwood Region Economic Development Commission, Meredith Mayer from Six Rivers Brewery in McKinleyville, and Jace Walker from Eco Groovy Deals in Arcata. Greg, to start this segment, let me ask you this. I think you know what's coming here. Does this economic transition put more pressure on you or not? And I know the right thing to say is that this is an opportunity. We're going to work on it and get it right. I get that. That's how I would approach it. too. But the thing is, there's really not much of a parallel circumstance to this, is there? There are a couple of states that are ahead of us, and we can glean things from them.
Right, right.
And we do, but they're nowhere near the size or of California, not as complicated. And that means you and a few others have to figure this out and get it right. So my question
Oh, thank
is,
you for all that responsibility.
No pressure. Okay.
Yeah, no pressure.
Yeah, so are you sleeping well these days, Greg?
I sleep like a baby.
Really?
Here's what's important. Humboldt County has traditionally been pretty undiverse when it comes to its economy, right?
Yeah, right.
You look at in the 50s, it was like 70% of the employment came through mm-hmm. the timber industry. We had, between 1945 and 1947, we grew from like 140 mills to 140 mills. I mean, we had a mm-hmm. huge boom in timber that occurred right after World War II because sure. the government was actually spending a lot of money on housing.
And people were buying houses.
Well, right, because we had the 30-year mortgage. We had the GI. We were spending a lot of money. There was a lot of pent-up demand from even back to 1929 for housing.
Sure.
And so all of a sudden, timber was king. We need mm-hmm. to build all these houses. And actually, timber employment really began to decline in the mid-60s. And then, kind of accelerated over time. And then we had the big crash in the late 80s and 90s and into the 2000s. And so our problem then was, the sort of putting all the eggs in one basket. And so our challenge now is to say, okay, we want to get this right, which means, the policies, the programs, and even the physical infrastructure that supports this cannabis business, whatever that turns mm-hmm. out to be. But we also have to be smart about saying that the economy that's resilient through either economic or natural disaster changes or whatever is one that's diverse. And so, we can't everybody, I often get asked the question, what is going to be the thing that saves us?
Right.
And my answer is nothing is going to save us. No one thing is going to save us.
So what's the plan?
So, we've seen a lot of infrastructure investment. You go out to the Harbor District. They've done a lot of building out there, improvement of infrastructures. Now we have, wind energy companies. We have the fish farm. We have a number of other these companies coming in who are interested in doing business here. Our issue has been historically that we had aging infrastructure. Even if someone was interested in coming here, we had really nowhere to put them. And so we're seeing more investment in that from the cities and the county, which I think is good. I spent a lot of time working on the airport, right?
Right.
And so one of the things that one of the reasons why I've worked on that in broadband over the years is because even though we are remote, we can't be isolated.
And, exactly.
And so we need to connect because if we are just looking at, one type of business or a local market as being the thing that's going to build up, rely on, then we're always going to be subject to bad times.
Boom and bust.
And, like I said, I've lived here all my life. I mean, should have been here in the early 80s. This place was just dying. I mean, the plaza was half empty. Eureka was dying. And
so you have confidence in
I have confidence in diversification. What I have confidence in is creating a place where people want to come and do business. And with the goal of exporting goods or products or, same thing, goods and products or services outside of the area to get capital flowing in. Mm-hmm. That and having that be in a number of different things driven by innovation and entrepreneurialism. And our ability to have policies and programs and physical infrastructure in place so that if someone is interested in doing business here, we can react quickly. And we're getting better at that than we have been. I mean, I've seen some real changes in the last few years. The Eureka changing of zoning codes and some of those other things that are creating a place where capital can flow to and thrive rather than flow to and die.
I want to ask both of you about this too. But Greg, first of all, do you want to make any news tonight and tell us about somebody who is coming here or something that is going to be happening soon? Because I think we were talking during the break that there's just a lot of nervousness around
right,
it.
Right, right. Well,
what,
I mean, I think...
What can you tell folks who are still a little worried about what's going on?
Right. You know, I don't have any news to make other than the news you're already reading. I think if people go out to the Harbor District and see some of the work that's going on out there, but the old pulp mill, you know, most people experience it from looking at it across the bay, and it looks kind of the same. But what you don't know is those warehouses and buildings are filling up with companies, and they're, you know, they're talking to the Nordic fish farm folks. They're, you know, we have the wind energy folks down here who are doing their EIR, which in that process for the windmills down on Monument Ridge.
Right.
We have the offshore people. You know, these are, you know, interestingly, two of these companies both have connections directly into Norway, so we're seeing, you know, this outside investment interest in this area. So we have to, you know, we got to look at what we offer, not just in quality of life, but what we offer in terms of business environment and make that happen. And so
we'll take Norwegian money.
Yeah, yes,
whatever the currency is, we'll ask Larry. Sure, exactly. Meredith, let's say somebody comes to you and they say, "I'm interested in starting a business in this area." What advice would you give to them, first of all?
I do that a lot, yeah.
You do?
I love that.
What do you tell people, and what sector do you send them to? What do you tell them?
I mean, well, I get, you know, people usually have something in mind when they come to you to talk to about, you know, someone has a passion or whatever. But, right. you know, I encourage it all. I mean, a high tide kind of lifts all ships. I think those cliches are ringing true and truer. It's important to shop local and buy local and stay loyal to your community. And so the more people buy in by investing in a business, and I think the stronger we'll become for us too, there's creative collaboration opportunities when you meet new people who have a new business and you're like, oh, that sounds interesting. And
are you doing any of that?
Sure. I mean, you know, even on the basic levels of like meeting, you know, through Humboldt Made, meeting Humboldt Hot Sauce, the owners of Humboldt Hot Sauce, and being able to bring their product into the restaurant and create a wing specially for them. But it's like, you know, finding ways to work with unusual businesses that may not seem like they fit, but somehow you can find a way to support each other and collaborate and we'll see results, positive results.
Jace, let's talk about existing businesses. Let's say somebody around here has in retail has been doing well, but is now struggling. What advice do you have for them? And do you hear folks having trouble with lenders at all right now or not?
There's two questions there.
Yeah.
Let's go. The first one was, what do I say with somebody who's struggling?
Yeah.
That's where I feel like I have a lot more advice.
What do you tell them?
I ask every person who comes in the door, are you looking for something special today? I feel like that you get a pulse for what people are looking for, what they want to buy. And if you don't have it, and if you did, you would sell it. So I think it's really important to listen to your customer and what your customer is looking for, and then go out and try to find that for them at the price that they want to buy it at. So, I mean, it sounds dumb, but I mean, you need to know who your customer is and what they want.
Customer
and that's
service
the only
that.
Way you can provide what it is.
Some
and
of the business.
That's
how you do it.
Our business. And I mean, you know, a couple hundred dollars a day times X amount of days a month, and you're talking thousands. So and that's another person that can be employed in Humboldt. So it's really smart to listen to what people want.
Do you know of any businesses or business owners you've talked to recently who have had trouble refinancing?
That I
without naming names,
I don't, and I'm kind of out of touch with that. I'm self-funded, so.
Greg, tell us about that the lending side of everything and how people are. What I'm specifically interested in here is how some of the existing businesses that think they'll be okay after this shakeout happens, but they need to figure out how to refinance now, make it for another couple of years, and who knows what's going to happen then. How's that?
And that's always a tough conversation to have. But, you know, we lend to people who don't get loans through traditional banks or credit unions. And so those are startups or people who haven't had a history of profitability or may have not hit certain targets that the banks or credit unions look for. First thing I always do is I don't want to hear about your money problem. I want to hear about your plan.
Absolutely.
Because when you come in and say, I just need the money to keep me going, and I ask the question, okay, so what got you here and what are you going to do to get yourself out of it? And they have no answer. Then I know that is probably not a good place to make a loan, right?
But if somebody does have a good plan and you can hear that, your response.
You can tell them all about what happened to Six Rivers Brewery in the last few months. I give you permission to lay that out as an example.
So Meredith is one of our customers.
Tell us about it if you want to.
You know, I mean, I think, you know, as she mentioned earlier, there was some issues around, you know, and it happened rather suddenly, so you really couldn't plan for it. And Meredith can tell you, I don't just say, oh, well, here's some money. It's like, okay, so what are you going to do about it?
Right.
And that's the best service, quite honestly, that any lender can do. The lender relationship is, you know, when we tell someone no, you know, we make our living lending money, so saying no doesn't help us either.
Right.
But the lender borrower relationship is really uneven, right? If I have a loan go bad, especially when I was at the bank, it'd be like, oh well, we plan for that. Okay, we'll survive. We know how to diversify our portfolio, and we have limits and everything else, so that doesn't really hurt us financially.
But in an organization like yours now,
same thing. You know, I mean, I have a fixed portfolio, right? My organization, REDEC, gets zero funding. I mean, we live off the interest of our loan fund, so we have to nurture it, care for it very carefully. And so, you know, if a loan goes bad, it's like, oh well, yeah, you know, that's going to be tough, but we plan for that. For the borrower, it's very devastating. And so the relationship is not even. And so if we say no, it's because we don't want the person on the other side of the table to get hurt. We're co-located with a small business development center. And one of the things that I always do with my customers, you know, existing customers and people who are coming in, is say, you need to understand not just profit and loss, but cash flow. And so we make them really drill down and do their cash flow projections. And that allows them to understand how cash is flowing through their business, where their cash needs are, and where they should be not spending money, whether it's a period of time or whatever. So that planning piece and really understanding how your business works financially, that's the first step. And then you can talk to us.
That is a special part of REDEC, too, because there is a nice relationship between their customer and, you know, they're looking out their best interests, not only for them to have that loan succeed and pay back, but I think on a community level that they want to see these businesses thrive. And and for us, it's nice to have someone hold us accountable to things like, you know, learn your cash flow, Meredith, or but also having the opportunity to have an honest conversation. And, you know, and I think that's the key, is like, hey, Greg, we're coming up against a time that I'm not seeing how we're going to get through this. Can we, you know, defer a loan payment or those things, but staying in contact and making sure that, you know, you're staying on top of it and kind of not trying to hide what's happening, but be proactive and come up with a plan. And that's what I think has been great about REDEC, is I know when I'm coming to them, I have to have a plan, so I'm already prepared before I get there.
And at Six Rivers, you're able now to see how you can weather this transition that we're in right now. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't have any other choice.
Yeah, well, yeah, really.
I got everything there. So Tully and I aren't going anywhere. We're gonna dig in. We're going to work hard. And if that means we take on more debt for a period of time.
Right.
But, you know, we're coming up with solutions. And certainly REDEC helped with that, as far as, you know, understanding the importance of understanding your day-to-day financials and paying attention to that, especially when you're dealing with a business that's taking in large volumes of cash, like a restaurant. You know, you want to pay attention to what's happening.
Greg, during this transition period in the economy, do you hear from more people now than you had been?
You know, interestingly, we are hearing. I mean, we're busy as we've ever been, but it's people who are expanding
not just trying to weather the storm.
No, not just trying to weather the storm. And I think because, you know, by the time it reaches my desk, if they're trying to weather the storm, we've already referred them over to the Small Business Development Center.
Okay.
And they really help you go through the process of whether or not you should be coming to me to ask for a loan. And that's the, you know, as a now longtime lender, you know, my advice is always really know what you need and what you want and how your business operates before you come and ask for money, because I have to be confident that you know how to run your business, and because I don't. I'm a generalist, right? Mm-hmm. I've looked at hundreds of financial statements and worked with lots and lots of businesses, but But no one knows the business better than you do.
Sure.
And so you need to explain it to me in such a way that I have confidence you know what you're doing. That being said, in our existing portfolio, if someone's running into some issues, we'll help them out, right? Because, you know, we are mission-driven. Our mission is to get business, you know, up and help businesses in Humboldt County. That being said, you know, our other motto, unpublished, is if we don't have a margin, we don't have a mission. Mm-hmm. And so
that keeps you in business.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
there
exactly.
You go. Well, let's talk to the one who is expanding right now. Did you self-finance this expansion, or did you have to go to some place to get help with that?
I feel naked.
She's not, though, however.
Yeah. I'm talking to the whole world here and telling people my thing. I have family, and they mm-hmm. believe in me, and so I don't have to pay interest.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's how I've been able to do it. And there's times when I don't pay myself because I got to make sure my people are paid, and I have a generous family. So the move to the plaza was our big problem. We really identified was our summer business. We just could not. That was those months we just had to borrow money and live off of savings.
In the old location.
Yes. Just keeping an eye open for a higher traffic area where we could create an environment. We want to create we're a thrift product, but we want people to feel like they're in a nice store. So.
And a lot of people on the plaza in the summer.
Right. That's where all the action was.
There
we
you
were
go.
Over there, you know, suffering. So we made that change, and we're seeing it right away. So,
Good.
If you don't have a great advisor and you're a small business person, you have to wear so many hats.
Yeah.
Luckily, I have a father who was a businessman and a mom who was an artist. So between the two of them, they've really helped me creatively and financially to be able to understand how to run a business mm-hmm. and be successful. Most people have great ideas, but I find that, you know, that practical, you know, grinding through, know the numbers, know your product, you know, be the advertiser, be the marketing guy, you know, be a good manager, mm-hmm. all those things.
And take out the trash
the small
and
person
sweep the floors.
And
I know.
Clean
yeah.
the toilets, yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh,
we are nowhere near done with this discussion. On the way, we'll take a peek at the future, fuzzy though it might be from a 2019 point of view. Nevertheless, we'll see what we can see. Back in a moment. Hey. You're listening to the Humboldt Chronicles. We're taking the pulse of the regional economy following the legalization of commercial cannabis roughly a year and a half or so ago. Our guests are Greg Foster, Executive Director of the Redwood Region Economic Development Commission, Meredith Mayer from Six Rivers Brewery in McKinleyville, and Jace Walker from Eco Groovy Deals in Arcata. Greg, this is the time of the show where we try to move things forward, kind of take a look down the way. So turn on the bright lights, the high beams, and look down the road. What do you see realistically?
John Kenneth Galbraith, who's a famous economist. The economic forecasting exists only to make astrologers look good. I'm paraphrasing that.
Be careful. You know, Larry's an economist. Don't
offend. Oh, yeah. Right.
I'm
exactly.
an astrologer.
Oh, okay.
I thought you said it was an honorary economist.
I know I can offend everybody with that quote. You know, going forward, what do we know in terms of, you know, we'll look at what predictability we have. We'll look at what's actually in place now. You know, there's leading indicators. And so it's interesting. I asked the question actually for another forum a while back, and I talked to the city of Arcata and the city of Eureka and some others. And I said, so what are your indicators that you're seeing? And the city of Eureka was reporting that, you know, For previous, I don't think it was a decade or so, they were building about 12 new housing units a year, which is pathetic. And then last year it doubled, and then this year it's going to be like four times as much. So we're seeing investment in that. We're seeing a lot of investment in real estate, in manufacturing and distribution, production, testing of the cannabis business.
Commercial real estate.
Yes. And and a lot of hiring. So, for example, you know, the one that was in the news is probably most high profile is Papa and Barclay buying the old Kmart.
Right.
You know, and they're talking, we'll have 70 to 100 employees in there. Mm-hmm. But they're not the only ones. I was talking to a business the other day, one I financed years ago that wasn't in the cannabis business, but now is a fully vertically integrated business. And they do, you know, $300,000 a month in payroll, you know. and so they... You know, they're doing, you know, I think they had 80 employees or something. I can't remember the number off the top of my head. So I think going forward, we're seeing that there will be a shakeout, right? But there always is a shakeout.
Yeah, sure.
That's the way that, especially when you have an emergent economy and, you know, people will start funneling in investment cash, whether it's .com or whatever the new groovy thing is, and there will be winners and losers. And that's the way markets work. So looking forward, you know, I'm seeing this capital flowing in. I'm seeing these new businesses open. You know, folks don't remember, if they haven't been here very long, what downtown Eureka looked like 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, when you know the Daly's building was there, where Redwood Capital and the theater were, and they were abandoned, and the parking lot was this crumbling old building, and the building across the street was crumbling, which is, you know, now a parking lot, but. And you know, building next to where my office was decrepit and crumbling. So in the last 20 years, we've seen a lot of investment back in downtown. We need to be smart policy wise, though. And you know,
in what way?
Well, so I mean, I don't want to pick on the Bayshore Mall because it serves a purpose. But Eureka added 850,000 square feet or so of retail in the mid 80s when the economy here was really tough, and that had the not unpredictable effect of driving and draining a lot of retail dollars out of downtown. Mm-hmm. And from other communities. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we need to be really careful about what we wish for. One of the things that we're trying to react to, and you're seeing that with the Harbor District and some others, is that as commercial manufacturing and warehouse space got very expensive to accommodate the new and growing cannabis businesses, we're seeing a lot of other traditional businesses without that margin getting displaced. And so, you know, we're seeing publicly owned industrial space becoming available to take those folks in because they can't pay the prices that some of the cannabis businesses are seeing. So, you know, we need it. There's always a law of unintended consequences, and we need to kind of, I think, policy-wise, understand what we do in policy and you know, more broadly. So if we're doing something in one area, we need to look at another area. Mm-hmm. County kind of recently went through that with the excise tax.
Yeah.
You know, where they were charging excise tax at the front based on square footage of you know, cultivated space or potentially cultivated space. And they're saying, well, wait a minute, we're paying the tax before we make the money, you know. And so now they deferred that, and I think that's taking some pressure.
That was a good change.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, that's the way it works.
Meredith, at Six Rivers in McKinleyville, when you guys meet and you talk about the next 6 months or the next year or the next 5 years or 10 years, mm-hmm. Is there any reluctance to talk too far out yet?
No way.
No, really?
Like I said, so I sell beer for the brewery, so I pop in and out of bars and restaurants, and people are, you know, other owners are talking to me and we're having conversations, but I'll tell you what I tell them, and it's, dude, we're going to be fine. You got to dig in. You got to stay smart. You have to work a little harder, and you have to be a little more creative. But it's all going to be fine, because I know, too, on work that I'm doing with the city of Eureka, or, you know, even the Chamber of Commerce in McKinleyville, uh-huh. those organizations are getting more creative, too. They're becoming a little more supportive of local businesses. They're changing codes. They're getting more excited. And so I think that there's just a general resurgence happening that's going to catch up with it. So it's just a matter of just hold on. Everyone just hang on, and we'll be fine.
So you're optimistic.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, really? Even for us, even though we're down, I just invested in two new tanks of beer. I have a new beer coming out, and I'm feeling confident it's going to, you know, it's going to pay off and it's going to pay for itself. So, but, you know, you have to take those leaps of faith and be, yeah, of course, you can't say, oh, maybe we're not going to be here in 6 months. You think, no, we're going to be here in 6 years, but what are we going to do in the next six uh-huh. months to ensure that? Uh-huh. So you got to stay on top of it. But, dude, we're going to be just fine.
There you go. I like that. That could be your new slogan. Yeah. That could be the name of a new beer. Tell Carlos about it.
Dude, we're fine.
Dude, we're fine. Dude, we're everyone fine. Chill.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an amber ale. And it's,
dude, we're fine.
But Jason, you sound optimistic as well with your move, and now there's more foot traffic and so on. So, are Larry and I a little too worried about what's going on? Because everybody's sounding optimistic here.
This is Humboldt County. I mean, we have the most creative people, I think, in the world that live here. And we've always been the first to do something extraordinary,
yeah.
I think, and unusual and trendsetting. And maybe we're a little behind the curve in a couple things. And so all those smart people that are super creative are stepping up. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a great place to live. And I think we can do great things, and we can make an impact on a large scale. Mm-hmm. And it's all about a positive attitude. Whenever I go in and talk to young business students at HSU, you know, it's really about what's your vision, mm-hmm. you know, what's your vision, and hanging into that and digging into that and living it and writing it and understanding it and going for it.
And going for
but
it.
But you got to support each other too. You know?
Absolutely.
You got to get out and shop at Eco Groovy Deals and go to Six Rivers Brewery.
We
and
do.
Where, you know, you got to show up and put your energy into the community and just, you know, adjust
There's
what you're
so
doing
much to
show that support.
And I think employers need to not be afraid. They need to look at how can I expand and what is good. And mm-hmm. I mean, I can personally make way better money than managing a business and running 13 employees, but I want to create jobs and mm-hmm. I want to do something good for the community, and I think you really have to think about that too. And what's your commitment to Humboldt?
Yeah.
Oscar Wilde said, "Optimist to pessimist, the difference is droll. The optimist sees the donut; the pessimist the hole."
You're quoting John Kenneth Galbraith, Oscar Wilde, first, both of them.
Yeah, there you go.
You mentioned diversifying the economy earlier.
Yeah.
So, not easy in a rural area at any point in any circumstance,
right.
But let me throw a twist into that.
Mm-hmm.
What about federal legalization? That would create new markets, but it would also create a lot more competition.
Correct.
Does an organization like yours and do other businesses plan for that? And if so, what is the plan?
Well, we don't lend to cannabis, so we don't. But we aren't policymakers. But I think we at the policymaker level we need to be ready. And mm-hmm. and you know, so I think our competitive advantage at the state level is not unlike what our competitive advantage would be at the federal level. And it's a couple of things.
Mm-hmm.
One of which is the knowledge base here around that industry, product development, how testing and all that is I think unparalleled. I think there is no smarter group of people than I've gone and toured these businesses and talked to these folks, and I'm just like, wow, you guys are really smart. And
the strength of the Humboldt brand,
right. Yeah. And so you can even take out the cannabis piece of that and say, you know, where are the communities that are really, really succeeding, big or small? And they're the ones that are really smart, that are creative, that are always creating the new thing, right? And so so we have this knowledge base here that's really important. But the other thing we have is we do have that Humboldt County feel, the Humboldt County thing, and I think that's a marketable thing as well. You know, Napa Valley it's 4%, if even that, of the wine production of California is in the Napa Valley. So they've created this mystique around it,
like champagne,
right? You know, exactly, and so I think, you know, if we're good at that, protecting our brand and being, you know, we're talking about the Humboldt stamp, and the county is going to continue to do that. I mean, I think it's really important that we protect that, because there are people out there who are stealing it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when people start to steal your stuff, you know your stuff is good, right?
Yeah.
And they're trying to imitate you, you know, imitation.
Right. There you go. Give us the quote.
Something about the sincerest form of flattery.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
Who
said
that? I don't know who said that.
Oh, man.
Do you know who said that?
No, I don't.
Chuck Rogers said that. I think you said it when I worked there.
I have said it before.
Yeah. But, you know, if someone is trying to steal, you know, your product look, your product type, you know then that they see mm-hmm. that you have a marketing edge.
Yep.
And so we have to be very, very aggressive about protecting that.
Yeah, for sure.
And B, we also have to keep evolving it, because brands wear out.
Mm-hmm.
In retail, the thing that's groovy,
you have to
one
keep
minute
the name out there.
Well,
not
always going to be groovy.
Eco is always groovy. Eco is always groovy.
No, you can't. close
dude, we're
going to
be fine, right?
Right.
Dude,
right.
We're
exactly.
going to be just fine.
We're
going to
be just fine.
Dude, we're
going to
be just fine.
We want to thank our guests, Greg Foster, Executive Director of the Redwood Region Economic Development Commission, Meredith Mayer from Six Rivers Brewery in McKinleyville, and Jace Walker from Eco Groovy Deals in Arcata. Larry, some final thoughts. What did we learn tonight?
Well, I think we learned a lot of things. I mean, one thing that was kind of an eye-opener as we were putting this episode together for me was thinking about how sort of the flow of the money through the economy makes a big difference in the retail economy especially. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of went into it thinking, well, the price per pound is way lower than it was 5 years ago, so there's less money. And that's the source of our problems. Mm-hmm. And there's some truth to that, but it also is true, as you discussed earlier, that what money there is still in this economy is going to different places. Mm-hmm. I mean, as Greg mentioned, the supply chain was pretty short in the old days. You grew a crop, someone bought it, and you all of a sudden had a bunch of money.
Yeah.
And now it's going to different places. So that's, I think, an important consideration for the retail economy. But also, just based on the discussion we had over the last 10 minutes, I'm once again, you know, my optimism is renewed, and I really, it's very heartening whenever I talk to business owners here in Humboldt County how much the county, you know, the county is part of the way that they think in terms of the business.
Yeah.
The community plays a role in each of these businesses in ways that I haven't seen in other parts of the country. So,
you know, I think you're right about that, Larry. And if we did make news tonight, it is that people are more optimistic than we thought or that we tend to hear. So thank you guys for being here. I'm Chuck Rogers with producer Larry Trask. This edition of the Humboldt Chronicles will be posted soon at 941lounge.com, at lostcoastoutpost.com, and at iTunes for listening and downloading. I want to say thanks again to the sponsors of this program, Humboldt Patient Resource Center, Eco Groovy Deals, Sonoma Lab Works, and the Humboldt County Collective. Thank you very much. We'll be back with the Humboldt Chronicles at 6 p.m. on the third Wednesday of each month, so we'll see you next time on June 19th at 6 o'clock.